faith, hope, inspiration, and edification. Welcome to the Edify Podcast with Billy Hallowell, a show that cuts through the cultural noise to explore the biggest headlines and issues of the day. Let's dive into today's show.
Hey, what's going on? It's Billy Hallowell. Welcome to the Edify Podcast. I am super excited for today's show. We're going to be welcoming Mike Donaghy, formerly the lead singer of 10th Avenue North. He's got some new music out, and he's got a lot of great insight on life. And that's what I love about getting a chance to sit down with Mike. I've had him on the show before in the past, and I'm super excited to have him on today. So with no further ado, let's welcome Mike to the Edify Podcast. Mike, how's it going today?
Oh, you know, just lovely.
Living the dream, right?
Yeah, living the COVID dream.
Living the COVID dream. You know, I feel like COVID is one of those things that we think every day I'm like, oh, it's going to get better. Like, we're not going to have to talk about this in 2 weeks. And then there's like a million new COVID things to talk about in 2 weeks. Right. So it's like, it doesn't end.
It really does. Every time someone brings it up, and now here I am, I've gotten COVID again. And so I foolishly posted on my Instagram that I had COVID again, you know, and I just got 1,000 questions. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, you know, I feel like some of these questions are leading the witness, Your Honor, that you're looking to pick a fight based on how I respond to this. So I'm just going to not respond.
But that like never happens on social media. I don't know why you would think that social media would be a place where people would fight.
Yeah, I'm actually working on a book right now. It's going to be called Grace in the Gray. And the subtitle is going to be something about learning how to more lovingly disagree.
I love that.
Because I've actually found ways, even on social media, to foster discussion. I know it doesn't seem like it's possible, but I've actually found ways to make it possible.
See, I love that. And that's what we need. Like, I think too many of us are in this vortex, this lie that we can't be kind to people we disagree with. I mean, the entire sentiment of Christianity is obviously focused on Jesus, but the things he tells us, love God, love others. He's not just like, oh yeah, tolerate your enemies and like, you know, just sort of hate them only a little. He's like, love them, clothe them, feed them. And I think, I don't know, that the dehumanization, and I didn't even know we were going to be talking about this, but here we are. I love it. But the dehumanization of other people and this sort of infighting and just going after people and, you know, social, I think, sometimes empowers some of that. Or I guess it empowers the impulses within us as human beings, the sinful impulses. But at the same time, we can use it for amazing things and to foster that. So I love that you're diving into that world. Is that scary to dive into, though? Like, is it hard? Because obviously people know you as a musician, and then kind of moving into this other realm. What's that like?
Well, I wrote one book before that came out in 2019 called Finding God's Life for My Will. That book did come a little easier than this one, because that book, I kind of just told my life story. So there's sort of when I didn't know where I was in the book, I go, okay, where am I in my life? All right, here we go. And you pick back up. This one, it just feels inexhaustible, the topic. You know, I just keep having more and more thoughts. I go, I can only write so many chapters. So trying to condense what I'm actually going to say, because I actually got started, and people go, why would you write a book about disagreement? You know, and I said, I think as a Christian musician, I have the perfect platform, because I've gotten to play in over 1,000 different denominations, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm one of the few places on the internet where people from the far left liberal and people from the far right will both write to me when I post something. So that's very unique nowadays, because it's so easy to block and cancel and curate who you're letting speak to you. I kind of feel it like a privilege that I could possibly speak to two sides of the same argument.
Yeah. And you're also, I would imagine any Christian artist is dealing with this. You're going to have critique. You're going to have people who disagree over different things and lyrics and ideas. I mean, it's just like anything else. Whenever you're out there talking about something, even when it's art, and you're going to have that. So that's interesting. I can't wait. I remember I had you on the podcast a couple years ago. We talked about your first book. I'm excited to have you back now once this book is out to talk about that. And you've got, I mean, you've had, it sounds like a really busy year. You just put out your first solo album and there's a lot to unpack there, but Flourish. What was it like for you to kind of go out on your own in this way, especially during the craziness of the last year and a half?
Oh man, it was beautiful. It was such a gift. I mean, if I didn't have that album to make, I would have lost my mind. Yeah, this was the first time since I was 20 years old that I wasn't touring in some capacity. So to be able to actually go all in on a record for, I mean, I got to work on the record for 6 months, 8 months, which usually with the band, you know, you would take a couple of weeks off of touring, you get in the studio, you spend 2 weeks, and that's one way to do it. There's nothing wrong with it. In fact, it's really fun. But this album, I got to sort of labor of love, work on it just over the whole year, basically. So very excited about it finally coming out.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, you're mentioning obviously the band 10th Avenue North. You guys, correct me if I'm wrong. Like, I want to go through this timeline because I think it's important. You were, before the pandemic, you guys were obviously, you know, amicably parting ways. You were planning sort of that farewell. Did you get to do any of the things you planned to do once COVID kicked off?
No. It shut it all down.
So that must have been, I mean, was that painful a little bit? Because after all those years of working together, wanting to kind of do that and have that farewell and then not, like, what was that like to process?
I was dramatically bitter. I mean, it felt like the most unfair thing that could have possibly happened. I was, when we, on top of it, we had just started our farewell tour. And we got all the way to Spokane, Washington, which apart from Alaska is about as far away from Nashville in the continental United States as you could possibly be. And that's when the world decided to shut down. And so it cost us, we did a sold out show in Spokane and it ended up costing us $25,000 because of the trucks and the buses and the crew and the lights and everything that we had rented for the next week. A lot of people who've never toured don't understand the metrics of what's going on. So we lose money on a sold out farewell tour, you know, and
that's just crazy. That's crazy.
And you go, I've given so much of my life to this and I don't get to ride out on the sunset. I don't even get to have like a big old pat on the back. And we ended up consolidating it into two farewell shows. And most of the people who had tickets to the tour had an online ticket and streamed it. But, you know, it wasn't ideal. Just.
Yeah. Well, it's not the way after all those years that you want to go out. Like, you wanted to go out and really give people that. And there's something to that, too, being able to kind of give people that farewell. And then you go, and I can't speak for you, but I'm just imagining what this must be like. So then you go into this crazy lockdown. After you didn't get to do any of these things, this major chapter in like half of your life is over. And now you are kind of on your own in this isolation. So like, what did you go through once that happened?
I went into the backyard and I started looking at this tree fort that my dad and I had built the year before. And we hadn't properly cemented some of the legs. And so the tree fort was kind of falling in certain places. So much to my wife's chagrin, I spent the first week of the lockdown just disassembling this entire tree fort and rebuilding it properly. And it's funny looking back, I can totally see what I was doing. Is my whole world felt completely out of control. So I needed something physical that I could put my hands to that I could say, I'm in control of this. So that's how it started. And then I was really sad and sulking for a couple weeks. And then, you know, when it's, I think it might've started when my buddy suggested, hey, you, I just camped out in my backyard with my girls and it was awesome. And that weekend we camped out, and there was this real pivotal moment where suddenly I realized, oh my goodness, if I would stop fighting against this lockdown, like if I would quit resisting my circumstance, there's actually a whole lot of beauty and magic right here. I'm privileged. I had enough in my savings account to not be intensely worried about how I was going to buy food and whatnot. And it became a really beautiful time with my family. There's actually a song on my record I wrote about that called Glory I Couldn't See.
See, that to me is interesting, because I also found that I was super stressed out in the beginning of it, because I live in New York and we were kind of at the epicenter of all that craziness. And then having this time that we're never going to have again, where we were all together and we were, you know, hanging out and we were doing things. And so being able to kind of look past the chaos of it into seeing like, wow, this is a unique time. Obviously, the scenario is not ideal, but like we're never going to be able to have this amount of time together again. And that to me was really interesting. And so taking all of that, you know, as you were working through the album, putting this music together, you know, did you have a really clear sense of what you were being called to tackle topic wise? Did it sort of flow as you were going? I'm just curious about that creative process for Flourish.
Yeah, it started, you know, it's funny. There's this quote, it's called, "The secret to peace is embracing your current circumstance as if you had chosen it." So this weekend where we camped out in the backyard, I started to choose it. And one of the things I had to choose was, I had always defaulted to my guitarist, who's now a producer. He always had the gear. He would always demo out the song ideas that we had on the road. Well, I didn't have any setup at my house. I mean, I just had a voice memo on my phone. And I finally accepted the fact that I needed to up my game, quote unquote. So I got a contact at this online agency called Blue Water Music, and I bought a bunch of gear. And so I actually started learning how to use Pro Tools and learning how to record myself and learning how to use a keyboard and all this stuff. Well, out of that, just my song idea factory just started going nuts. And of course, I didn't have anything else to do, but I probably wrote 100 songs last year. More, wow. Definitely more songs than I'd ever written. And so Flourish, it's funny, I would put songs in categories. And anytime I wrote a song that I go, you know, I think that could work for a CCM record, you know, quote unquote, like a more pop record, I'd put it in this folder. And I actually ended up putting out some EPs that were more like kind of dramatically different sounding, just because I happened to write some songs that didn't fit this pop record either. So the process was just radically free. I just kind of opened it up and just said, oh man, I'm just going to write just what I need to hear. And then pulling back, you know, Bird's Eye View, it's no wonder that the theme of most of the songs I was writing was, how do I flourish even when my circumstances don't feel like they're flourishing, you know?
Yeah, which I think everybody could relate to in the past 2 years. Like, the, you know, that's the, you know, life has been chaotic, it's been crazy. And how do you find that joy in the middle of pain or chaos or loss or just uncertainty? And that seems to be what you ended up tackling here.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean,
Go ahead. What
were you gonna say? I was going to say, I just read a review of my album and they said, you know, the lyrics are mostly just meat and potatoes, but blah, blah, blah. And there's always that tension of, I want to write something so poetically different than anything anyone has ever said. And then there's, man, I want to write something that cuts to the heart of what we're all feeling.
Yeah.
So I kind of go for what I need to say and pray, and then hope that it resonates with other people.
Well, and like, you know, the thing about that is, and I find that a lot of times with critics, it's super interesting. I mean, as somebody, I mean, you've written books, I've written books. When I work on a book, I'm always like, what can I do that is like the most innovative and unique idea? And, you know, I'm like tripping over myself trying to come up with a concept that nobody's done before. And then you go and you look at the books that have the most reach and the books that are going to impact people the most. It's the same 10 topics told a different way. And like, you know, it's interesting to me. I think people resonate with very basic concepts because we still struggle with them. No matter how many times somebody addresses, you know, flourishing in the chaos and all of that, we're still experiencing that. And life is ebbing and flowing and changing. And if you had said 3 years ago, we're going to live through this crazy pandemic that's going to disrupt everything, we probably would have thought that was a crazy prediction. And yet here we are. So I guess my point is, it's easy to sort of critique those things and say, oh, this is, you know, it's all basic stuff. Well, this is what people need. This is what people desperately need right now. And I love that you tackled this and took this on. Let me ask you this, like, more, it's a little bit of a broader question, and I don't know how easy it will be for you to answer, but when you look at your career, you know, decades of music now, and you are obviously in a new chapter with Flourish, but what lessons have you learned about your faith? Like, how has your faith changed and ebbed and flowed and moved throughout these couple of decades?
Oh, are you kidding me? I'm in. You know, I think kind of what you said is that when you first, for me, when I first became a Christian and when I get to college, I was so excited about so many superfluous topics, right? That even this book I'm working on, I started out wanting to write about every single controversial topic, and I was going to present both sides of all these controversial topics of like sort of the fundamental view and the more liberal view and kind of talk about all this stuff. And then I realized I don't really feel particularly equipped to write that book. I think someone else could write that book much better than I could. But what really fascinates me isn't the position people take on controversial topics. It's the posture they take when they enter into those conversations. Mm. Mm. In other words, the main thing about my faith that's changed is it's just a lot simpler. I remember I used to get so hung up on Calvinism and Arminianism. I would love to fight people about that. And now I go, okay, cool. You believe that? Okay. You know, scripturally, how do you support that? Okay. Are you humble? Is that producing like a deep humility in you? Great. Sounds good. Like you start looking for, I mean, Jesus talked about it. The fruit, it's kind of like you can use all the words you want. I'm just a lot more interested in the fruit. Or as Brennan Manning said one time in one of his books, he said, a lot of Christians need to read less of the Bible. Like, just stop reading it and actually let the parts you've read change you before you try to move on. And so I read more slowly. I ask myself simpler questions, because I've realized some of these big ones probably not going to figure out. It's probably why they're still going around a couple thousand years later.
It's like, I mean, okay, the rapture, right? The first book I wrote was a journalistic exploration into the end times. And so like every perspective on the end times within the Christian realm, what do people believe? And I did not encounter any other topic that made people more angry and frustrated on all sides than the rapture. Like all the different views on it, all the different perspectives. And you know, you could talk to 10 different people who have different views about the rapture. Some don't think it's going to happen at all. Others think that it will. And you know, you've got pre, post, mid, you can go on and on. But I realized, well, what's the approach to dealing with it? Is this really a salvation issue? It's not. You know, you can have a perspective on it. It's not a salvation issue. It's just an interpretation issue. And it, just what you were saying before reminded me of that. I think we have a lot of those things that are not the core of what Christianity is. They're just parts of the faith that we're not going to be able to solve. And everyone thinks they have the answer, but does it, if they don't have the answer, is it really a salvation issue? So yeah, that's fascinating to me that you were thinking of kind of diving in that way on it. And look, the fact you were even thinking about it is incredible to me, because it's difficult and it's tough. And I think the church is struggling right now to kind of figure out where it stands on a whole bunch of things that are going on. And, you know, we're in the midst of that chaos, and it's easy to lose sight of the core. And I think that's happened for people on all sides, right? And I don't know how you feel about that, but that's kind of been my take, is that there's a lot of confusion right now.
My biggest thing, and I actually wrote a chapter about this in the book. You know, over the last couple of years, a lot of sort of celebrity status like Christians have very publicly sort of denounced their faith.
And I was going to ask you about this.
That elicited really strong reactions from other people. And the problem with that, the problem with taking a really strong, ardent response to people who are oscillating in their faith, is that it's completely unscriptural. In Timothy, it says in 2 Timothy, I believe, maybe it's 1 Timothy, it says, reproach those who disagree with you with all gentleness. Perhaps God will grant them repentance leading to the truth. Okay?
I love that.
So your job is to be gentle. God's job is to change. Jesus backs this up with a parable. He goes, you know, there's a field, and there's an enemy who comes in and he plants weeds amongst the wheat. And when the weed starts growing up, his workers go, oh, look at all these weeds. We need to pull these out. Let us pull them out. And he goes, no. That's not your job. He goes, that's mine and the holy angel's job. And it's almost like he's saying, if you go back to Isaiah, a flickering flame he will not quench, a bruised reed he will not break. To me, someone who's oscillating, flickering, going back and forth, doesn't know what they believe, it seems that Jesus, by this parable, is saying, here's what you need to do. You need to treat everyone like they're wheat until they believe it for themselves. Because, he says, if you pull out the weeds, you're going to pull out all the wheat as well.
That's a really good word.
We hate that. We hate that. We don't like to live in the tension of that. We don't like to be called to love. We would much rather be called to be right, because it's easier and it demands nothing of us. Yeah.
Well, and I think I've seen you engage in this way. And I know for me, when some of those, and I don't know everybody, but when some people had publicly, you know, renounced, my reaction was to get to know them and reach out to them. I mean, and to just have conversations, and, you know, not because you're trying to be right, but because you're being there and having those conversations and getting to know people. And I think that's so important. And really, for anybody listening, the reality is there is going to be more of that, not just prevalent people who are out there and who are well known, but people in our lives. There's a lot of pressure in culture. There's a lot of confusion in culture. And I think that pressure and confusion and the natural move. And by the way, this isn't all a bad thing. I mean, the church has done really well, and feel free to push back on any of this, but the church has done really well historically in moments when the church is not in the majority culture. There are a lot of negatives to the majority culture and cultural Christianity. So the reality is that these are things people are going to have to confront. And if they don't do what you just described, it can have a really negative impact on those people. And again, we're then not listening to scripture and what scripture tells us. So I appreciate you sharing that. I think that's huge. And I love that you're dealing with that in the book. Hopefully it challenges people.
Yeah, it's challenging me. I mean, I love to win an argument. Oh man.
Me too.
Feels so good. And yet I just haven't met anyone that went, how did you come to know Jesus? Oh, I was in the middle of this argument with somebody. And they really just bashed me. I mean, they just crushed me, and I saw the error of my doctrine, and I came over. You know,
you're so right.
It works.
It makes people double down. Well, listen, I could talk to you for like 3 hours, because this is fascinating. I want people to grab Flourish. I want them to hear your music. What are you, just like last question for you to get back to the music, because we talked about this a little bit, but I think it's so important to ask artists like yourself, what is your end goal for this music? What are you hoping for the thoughts and the feelings and the emotions for those who grab the album?
Yeah. So just to tie in what we were just talking about with this question, you know, my buddy John Steingard from Hawk Nelson was very famously, I mean, Fox News ran a big article on him and talked about how he was deconstructing his faith. There's a song on this record called Something That I Can't Explain, which is a song for deconstructionists. I wrote it with the former guitar player of Hawk Nelson, and we wrote it for John. And I sent it to him afterwards. I go, hey, bro, I was trying to figure out if I could write a worship song for the deconstructionists. What do you think? And he texts back, goes, bro, I love it. It's great. And so I guess I'm hoping that whoever listens to the record can just find songs to meet them where they are and provides them songs that they can sing to God honestly, but that also don't let them off the hook, if that makes sense. There's a song, the second song on the record is called Follow You Into the Fire. And I say, God, whatever it takes, what I need to change, let me know. And It's like this true grace has this way of really forgiving us where we've missed it, but still calling us to who we are meant to be. And I hope these songs do that for whoever listens.
I love that. Listen, Mike, I so appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for coming on.
What a pleasure.
That brings us to the end of today's Edify podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Head over to the Edify app. It's E-D-I-F-I in the app stores. You can also head over to edify.app in your web browser. Download the app to listen to thousands of Christian podcasts. Like, I'm talking all the shows, amazing shows. We also have a great network of original and partner shows over at edify.app/podcast. Check that out today and tune in for the next episode of Edify. I hope you enjoyed this conversation and we'll see you very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Edify podcast. For more transformational and faith-inspiring podcasts, head over to edify.app, where you can stream thousands of Christian shows right now. And for convenience on the go, download the Edify podcast app today from the Apple and Google Play stores and at edify.app.